We're on Daf Pei Tes Amud Beis. We did the Mishnah yesterday, and now we start the Gemara. And one of the things that the Mishnah mentioned was the story of a piece of wood and how much of a size of a wood, Motzi Eitzim, would you have to take out into Rishus HaRabim in order to be chai from Lechus Otso? What would be the minimum shear? And the Mishnah established it as fuel, that you would use this piece of wood to cook an egg. Tanya Chadiz, Tanina Chadizim, the Gemara is bothered by this. So you're taking a look now on Pei Tes Amud Beis, five lines up from the bottom. We already learned in a previous Mishnah. And the question is, why then did the Mishnah here have to repeat that which we know already back on Daf Pei, we learned Kone, Kidei Lasos Kulmus, right? If you carry out a reed, which is another form of wood in essence, then you would make a quill out of it. So what's the minimum size that you need to make a quill? Imhoya Av Omerusas. If on the other hand it's not fit for using it as a quill because it has cracks in it, or it's very thick, then you use it as fuel. Kidei levashel beitza kala shebebeitza. How much fuel would you need in order to cook a small egg, or an egg that you can cook quickly? Trufa nesuna bilfus. It's already been beaten. It's already in a pot, in a frying pan. You know, you're just ready to go. All you need is a little bit of fuel. So why did that Mishnah have to repeat the shear of Motzi Eitzim? So the Gemara now is going to distinguish between Eitzim in our Mishnah and Kana, a reed back in the Mishnah on Daf Pei. Ma'al d'tema hosam. There, in the case of that Mishnah, when we talk about reeds, because reeds are not fit for anything. You know, the only thing you can do with a reed is really use it as a quill. But in the case of eitzim, of a solid piece of wood, it has different functions. Aval eitzim de chazu lebava di aklida. So they used to make a key, and the key was made out of perhaps metal. But then they added a tooth to the key, you know, that would fit into the door lock, and that was made of a piece of wood. And for that, you need a very, very small piece of wood. Is afilu kolshu? Maybe you're talking about a very small piece. Kamashmon, the Mishnah says no. That for most people, the purpose of wood is commonly for kindling, for using for fuel, and therefore the measure, the shear for Hotzah is determined by what most people would do with this wood. And most people use it, as we said, for fuel in order to cook an egg. And therefore, the Mishnah comes to be Mechadish that even though we have Eitzim, which has a greater significance than Kana, than a reed, but nevertheless we still go by what's commonly used. And the common use for wood is for fuel. Now the Mishnah says, Tavlin kidei l'tabel beitza kala. So again, our shear is always this small egg, and you season an egg by putting spices on it. So if you carried out enough spices that you would need to spice an egg, to season an egg, then you're chayef. We're a minu, but we have another Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that Tavlin Shnayim Ushlosha Shemos Mimin Echad. You could have seasonings that have different names, or Mishlosha Minim Vishem Echad, or they have three different kinds, and all of them joined together or integrated to form the shear. Now you'll notice that the Mishnah has two categories. So we'll give examples of these two categories. The first category are min echad. So we're talking about pepper, but they have different shemos. There's something called black pepper, white pepper, long pepper. So they have different names. Then we get to the case of shlosha minim, the different species. So for example, in something that's called karpas. You have something called garden karpas, you have river karpas, meadow karpas, and here they're different species. But in any event, all of these are used for seasoning, and the mitztaref, they join together to a shear. And in fact, the Mishnah makes a general statement and says that asurim u'mitztarfim ze'im ze'. That if, for example, you have spices or seasonings that are forbidden, maybe they're tevel, they haven't been mafresh meiser, whatever it might be, then we can combine all of them in order to make up a shir. V'yomar Chizkia, and here we start the daf for today on daf Tzadi Yom and Aleph, a statement of Chizkia, b'mine mesika shanu, hol ru'uyim l'masei kedera. And Chizkia is coming to restrict the application of the Mishnah to a case where all of these spices add a kind of a sweetness, a flavor to the pot. So the Gemara analyzes this. Tama, the reason why we can take all these different kinds of seasonings and integrate them to form one shear is because the Avi dechazu lematek es hakedera, because they're all fit to flavor the pot. So in other words, you can imagine a pot and you have different seasonings and you would use them all in order to enhance the taste of the pot. It would seem by implication that if you cannot combine all these seasonings together to enhance the taste of your pot, lo, then you have to separate the different seasonings. Each kind has its own shear, but you cannot join half of this and half of that. Whereas our Mishnah doesn't make any qualifications. It would seem that in case of our Mishnah, all seasonings, completely all seasonings, would be integrated to form a shear. So my answer is, let's add to our Mishnah, Hachinami Chazu Lematek, that all of these different seasonings have the ability to enhance the taste of the pot. Now we go on to the Mishnah that speaks about husks and peels and different substances that could be used for dyes. So for example, klipei agozim, okay, this is the outside peel of a nut, of a walnut. Klipei rimonim, the peels of pomegranates. And sotis, also a different kind of an herb. It's called in English a safflower. Upua is called in English a madder. And all these things are used to produce dyes. And the Mishnah establishes that what's the minimum shear fautsa? That's enough to use that small amount of dye to dye a small cloth. A woman would wear a small cloth on top of a hat. We're a minu, but we have a stira, we have a contradiction from a brisa. So the brisa says, Hamotzi samonim, if he takes out all these herbs, shruyim, and they are steeped, meaning they are already, you know, when you take a dye, you put the natural material into a cauldron of water, so it's already soaking in the water. And what's the shear of motzi samonim? Is kidei litzbar behen dugma le'ira. Now, ira is a kind of a tool that was used by a weaver for an oreg, and there used to be a cloth that was added to this particular utensil, and if somebody was selling these cloths, they would use a dugma. Dugma means just a sample, you know, a very small size that they can get, you know, an impression of what it's like. But in any event, we're talking about carrying herbs, samonim, in a very small minimum size. I mean, this is not enough to dye a small garment. I mean, this is enough, you know, just to dye a sample, a very small amount. So we have now a stira lechora between the Mishnah and the Braisa. And the Gemara answers, we have a comment that was attached to our Mishnah, and that is Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Ravua Lefisha Einanim Torech Lishros Samemonim Litzbaben Dugma Leira. There are two different cases here. The Mishnah is addressing one, and the Bryce another. The Mishnah is talking about the natural herbs, and the Bryce is talking about the herbs that are already soaking in the cauldron at the second stage. So that if you have the natural herbs, you know what? It's not worth it to carry around these herbs in order to soak them, in order to get the amount of dye that could be meaningful for a very small sample. But if you already have gone through the entire trouble, you've gone through the entire process, you already have a dye that is prepared, that is already soaking, the herbs are soaking in the water, etc., then it's worth it for you to carry around enough of a minimum size so that you could dye a very small sample enough for that particular utensil used by the argim to make a sample. Now the Mishnah goes ahead and says that we have a long list of detergents. Again, some of these detergents we've heard of, some of them are not familiar to us. And the question is, what is the size, the minimum size of a shear for a detergent? It could clean a beged, it could clean a garment, and therefore yichayef otso. So Tana, we have a braisa. Meira glaim ad ben arboim yom. Okay, I don't know exactly where they kept it, but they would hold on to urine for 40 days and became very pungent. And at some point, it could actually be used as a detergent. And neser, there's something called natron. Other kinds of detergents. Tana, we learned in the Brisa, neser alexandrius velo neser anfanditrin. There are two types of natron that came from different countries. One came from Egypt, from Alexandria, and the other came from a country called Anpatrus, which the Gemara identifies in Nida as a place where there was a great meeting between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. Anyway, these are two different forms of natron. They're both used as detergents. And the one that comes from Alexandria, that natron, is very, very powerful, very strong. And therefore, even if you take out a small amount of that natron, it's enough to serve as a detergent, and it's chashev, and therefore yichayef otso. Then we have in the list of detergents, we have something called boris. So the Gemara now is going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out what this boris is. So if they first start with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, zechol, it's sand. And sand can be used as a detergent. So the Gemara asks, but we have a brisa that lists boris and chol separately. Meaning that obviously boris and sand are two different things. So you can't identify boris as sand. So what is boris? Elamai boris, kabrisa. Kabrisa is translated to English as sulfur. And sulfur can be used as a detergent. Mesve, but the Brisa lists boris and kavrisa as two separate things. They can't be the same. What does the Brisa have? Now this Brisa is in a different context. And this Brisa has to do with the laws of Shvius. And that which grows from the ground in the seventh year of the seventh cycle is sanctified with Kedusha Shvius. And you're not allowed to use it, or shall I say, misuse it, or abuse it. Now the Brisa gives you a whole list of different species and different subjects that are included in the laws of Shvius. And on that list, we have different kinds of things that grow from the ground. We have chalbitzin, lalinun, haboris, v'ahol. So these are translated as sow thistles and wormwood, Boris and Aloe. Now, we've just identified Boris as sulfur. And the truth is that sulfur is not included in the laws of Shvius, because Shvius requires something that grows from the ground. And if you identify Boris as sulfur, Isal Kedaita Kabriso, which means that Boris is sulfur, how can it be listed as something that's prohibited under the Shvius laws? Kabriso mi Isa b'Shvius, v'atan, you have a Brisa that will prove that sulfur is not included in the Iser of Shvius, because that kal kol sheish bo ikar, anything that's rooted in the ground, yesh lo Shvius, is included in the Kedusha Shvius. Shein lo ikar, if it's not rooted in the ground, ein lo Shvius. So we have to come up with a different definition of Boris. So we've already rejected two definitions. It's not sand, and it's not sulfur. So what is it? Elamai Boris Ola. So Ola actually has medicinal purposes, but the Gemara apparently understood that Ola was used as a detergent. Now we just had a brisa in which we listed Boris and Ola separately. So you cannot identify Boris as Ola. Well, Gemara says, you know what? Trei Gavni Ola. There are two species of Ola. Boris is one of them, and there's another species as well. Okay, now we go back to the list of detergents that are mentioned in the Mishnah. We have something called Kimolia. Amar Rav Yehuda Shlof Dutz. Okay, we don't know what this is, but another type of detergent. And lastly, we have Ashlag. Amar Shmuel, what's Ashlag? So Shmuel himself had no clue what Ashlag is. Shil Sinu Lekol Nechote Yamin. I asked those who go down to the sea. These were included under underwater divers that used to pick up pearls from the bottom of the sea. And I asked them, what is Ashlag? The Omrili Shonaneshme, its Aramaic name apparently is Shonana, Umishtakach, and where do you find it, this detergent? Binukva de Marganisa. I guess the pearls, when they lifted them up from the bottom of the sea, they had holes in it, and you could open up those holes. Umafkile Beramtsa de Parzla. And if you had a certain kind of an instrument, you could remove through these holes the shonana, which is a kind of a detergent, which is called ashlag. The Mishnah tells me pilpeles kol shehu. If you're taking out pepper, then any amount of pepper. Now, this is not our pepper that we eat, because our pepper, like any other foodstuff, is going to have a shear of that of a dried fig, as we said, a grogeres. But this is a different kind of a pepper, which apparently is used for some other purpose. Maybe as a spice or a seasoning, but it's very, very powerful. And therefore, even a kol shehu of this kind of pepper is enough. Okay. Actually, I made a mistake when I said a dried fig. Let me correct myself. What I meant to say is that our pepper fits into what's called tavlin, seasoning or spices, and we said that's the shear that you would need to spice an egg. Itron kol shehu. Itron is tar. Mine besamim. Any type of spices, any type of metals, is even the smallest amount. So we're going to have to see what kind of spices we have in mind. These have to do not with spices for seasoning, for a pot, for cooking purposes, but these are different kinds of spices that are used for perfumes. And when it comes to perfumes, we're going to see in the Gemara that even a minimum amount of perfume is considered choshev, it has significance. Me'avnei ha-mizbeach u'me'avnei u'me'ofer ha-mizbeach Here also a kolshu, a smallest amount. I mean, you're talking about stones that are used for the mizbeach, or earth that was used for creating a mizbeach. And sometimes when they had the mizbeach, there were chips of stone or bits of earth that came off the mizbeach. And those were very choshev. They had kedushas mizbeach. And therefore even the smallest amount is chayev for hotzah. Mekek sfarim. These are worms that attack parchment and books. I guess you'd call it a bookworm. Umekek mitpachoseyem, and the mantles that cover the Sifrei Torah, and they too were attacked and decayed by these kinds of little creatures. Kolshehu, the smallest amount. Now, what are you doing with these worms? I mean, that's not clear from the Mishnah. We'll have to see the Gemara. Oh yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Here the Mishnah does spell it out. Shematznian osan legonzam. Now, if we're talking about, for example, a Sefer Torah that was attacked by worms, and now it's partially disintegrated, then we still require Gniza. Because once it was endowed with Kedusha Sefer Torah, then even though it's no longer functional as such, nevertheless, we have to put it in a special place, and we have to seal it up. Like the Gniza in Cairo, where we found many old manuscripts. And since we're required to put into Gniza even the smallest amount of a Sefer Torah, therefore it has chashivus, it's something of value, of importance, and yechayv for kolshu. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af ha-motzi mishamshei avodah zarah kolshu. If he's carrying out articles that are used within the context of idol worship, then he's liable for them. And perhaps what he means is that there's a mitzvah of sreifa. We have to burn anything that was used for idolatry. Shenemar, because the pasuk tells us in the parasha of Avodah Zarah, in Dvarim, it says, "V'lo yidbak biyodcha mu'uma min acherim." And what this means is that you cannot have in your hand anything from cherim. Cherim here means that which is banned, which is totally osur padno, and it is ton sreifa, it has to be burned. The Gemara analyzes, pilpeles kolshehu, lamai chazya, what are you going to use this very small pepper? Remember we said it was a pepper that had a certain fragrance to it, and the Gemara answers, l'reach ha-peh, if you have bad breath, you put even a small amount and it improves your breath. Itron kolshu, tar, any amount. Lamai chazi, what are you going to do with tar? With silchasa. And apparently this is good for a headache. So it has therapeutic value. And even the smallest amount of tar is therapeutic. Mini besomim kolshahen. We're talking about spices. Any amount of spices. Okay then, now the Gemara quotes a brisa that expands upon this law and has an enumeration of other things which also are meaningful and significant even in the most minimal amounts of a kolshu. Tanu Rabbanan hamotzi reach ra kolshu. Apparently, in the old days, when a person had some sort of illness and he wanted to ward off the spirits, then he would take a small amount of a substance that had a foul odor, and it was effective to ward off the spirits. Shemen tov kolshu. Now, when it comes to something that has fragrance, then any small amount that could give a fragrant smell is significant. Argamon is a purple dye, kolshu. Okay, this is a dye that also has a fragrance to it, Rashi says. And normal dyes, you have to have at least a shear to dye a piece of cloth. But here, since it has a fragrance to it, then any small amount is significant. Ubasulas Havered Echos. Now we have a rose petal, a young rose petal, and all you need is one single petal, and it has a good smell to it. Rav Haigon has an interesting pshat here. He thinks that we're not talking about a natural rose, but rather an artificial rose, which is made of dyed cotton. And apparently they also used it as, you know, as some sort of decoration on the table. Mini matochos kol shehu. The Mishnah says any amount of metal is significant. L'mai chazu, what are we going to do with a small metal substance? Tanya, we learned in a braisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer shekein roy lasos mimeno darbon katan. So they needed a kind of a of an object to get the ox moving. It was a small amount of an iron kind of stick. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, Omer Hareolai Barzel. A person takes upon himself what's called Nidre Hegdesh, which means he commits himself to donate something to the Beis HaMikdash with Kedushas Damim. And in a case where he says, I will bring iron to the temple, according to the opinion of Acherim, which is Rabbi Meir, Lo Yifchos Mi Ama Al Ama. The piece of iron that he is committed to bring and donate has to be a minimum size of one amma square, one amma long, one amma wide. Less than that, it's not worth it for the Beis HaMikdash to pick it up. L'mai chazya, what is the Beis HaMikdash going to do with a piece of iron, a flat piece of iron that's one amma by one amma? Omer Rav Yosef le'chalya orev. So what they used to do is they used to take these plates of iron, and they used to place them down on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash in order to get rid of the crows. They didn't want the crows to land on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. So they used to put these iron plates. Each one was one amma square, and that would keep away the crows. And the crows didn't want to sit on these iron squares. They were very sharp, and they made them with sharp edges. They even knocked nails into them. So therefore, if a person accepts upon himself Nidre Hegdesh, a vow to bring a contribution of iron to the Beis HaMikdash, it's got to be a minimum amount of iron from which they could manufacture this thing called Kalya Orev, this crow chaser. Ika Diamri, there's another nusach in the Braisa, but it's pretty much identical to what we said before. Acherim om lo yifchos mi kalya orev. That if he takes upon himself a commitment, he has to bring a minimum size of iron that could be used as a on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash. Kama om Rav Yosef, amo amo, one amo square. Now the Braisa has a case of nechoshes, which is copper. Lo yifchos mi ma kesef. How much of a size of copper would bring in, if you sold it on the market, a ma kesef, which is a ma of silver? That was the currency in those days. Six ma's make up a dinar, or a mana, otherwise known as a mana. So you have six ma's, and they make up a dinar. And that's your minimum value, and you would have to have a significant amount or size of copper that you could bring in a ma kesef. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Rabbi Elezer Omer, lo yifchos. If a person takes upon himself a commitment to give copper to the Beis HaMikdash, or alternatively, if a person carries copper out in Rishus HaRab on Shabbos, is the minimum amount is a tzinora ktana. They would take copper and make a fork out of it, a very small fork. The Gemara is going to discuss what you do with this small fork, and it's made out of copper. L'mai chazio, what do you use this little fork for? Amar Abaye, shemechatetim bas apsilos umekanchina neros. Then in the Beis HaMikdash, this week we have the parasha of Hadlokas HaNer, and they would trim the wicks of the menorah, clean out the lamps, and they would use a little fork for that. Small fork. It was made of copper. Mekek svarim, mekek mitpachos. So we're talking about decayed scrolls or decayed wrappings over scrolls. And he points out here in the footnote that mekek in the Mishnah is actually the name of a worm. And this was a worm, as we said before, that would attack books or scrolls or parchment. Om Rav Yehuda, mekek de sifrei, the worms of scrolls, tfach de shiroi, and the worms of silk. So I'm going to have a whole list here of you, the different kinds of worms that you find in different places. There are worms that attack scrolls, there are worms that attack silk. Well, perhaps you can make silk out of these worms. Ilah de invi, certain kinds of very dangerous worms that attack the grapes. Uped de se'ene, also a very dangerous kind of a worm that attacks the figs. Veha, and also a worm which is called a ha worm, dirimoni, that attacks the pomegranates. Kulu sakanta, they're all very dangerous. And the Gemara tells us a story about someone who actually apparently died from these worms, or anyway, maybe he came close to death. Hahu talmida davi yosef kami de rabbi yochanan vavi ka'achil te'enei. So there was a Talmud that was munching on figs in the presence of Rabbi Yochanan. And all of a sudden, Amalei screams out, Rebbe, kotzim yeshli b'te'enim. There are thorns in the figs, which means there are worms in the figs that I just ate. Amalei, katle peh l'den. Now the Mefarshim say, this is not Rabbi Yochanan talking to the Talmud. That would not be the right thing to say to a Talmud when he declares that a peh worm has killed him. So again, I don't know if he died, but the Gemara wants to illustrate that these worms are very dangerous. There are some people today in various communities here in Israel that will not eat figs because figs are classically full of worms. It's very difficult to remove worms from figs. The Mishnah says, Hamotzi kupas harochlim. Now the rochlim used to carry around these kupos. These were peddlers that went from place to place, town to town, like Avon calling. And they had different sorts of spices in different little compartments in a single box. If you carry out one of those boxes, afal pishi yeshba minim harbe, you might say that he's chayev really for multiple hotzos. Every single one of these little compartments that's holding on to a different spice, if he's a spice salesman, is itself enough to be mechayev in felechas hotzo. But no, the Mishnah says, eino chayev elechatas achas. There's one maisa hotzo for the entire box. And even though, had he taken out the individual compartments in the box, each one would be a separate hotza, but since they're all together in one box, he's chayef for carrying the box, and he's only going to be chayef one single chatos. Zirone gino, garden seeds. And here we have two statements in the Mishnah as far as the minimum the minimum shear of garden seeds. The Tanakhama says, Pachos mi kigro geres. It's a little bit less than a dried fig. Normally, the shear for ochlin, for food, is dried figs, but here he's got seeds. And seeds are significant in and of themselves, whether he eats them or he plants them. And therefore, it's less than a grogeres. But it sounds like it's only a bit less than a grogeres. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira Omer, it's a lot less than a grogeres. It's chamisha. It's five of these little seeds of the Zerone Gina type, which is a lot less than a dried fig. Let's say, for example, it's a half of a dried fig. And here we have a whole discussion as to whether or not Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira is arguing on the Tanakhama or he's interpreting the Tanakhama. And he's saying the following, that there are two choices, and we're going to take the more strict one in order to establish the minimum shear for Zerone Gina for these garden seeds. What is smaller, the pachas migrogeres or the five seeds? Depends on the size of the seeds, obviously. But if the seeds are very small, even though the sum total of five seeds is less than a grogeres, significantly less than a grogeres, nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseris says you'd be chayav, and he's just embellishing the words of the Tanakam. And here we turn to the Aftzadi Amid Beis. Zera kishurim shnaim, zera diluim shnaim, zera pola mitzri shnaim. So we have different types of seeds that are mentioned here in the Mishnah. And apparently, in the three categories of seeds that are mentioned here in the Mishnah, we have a significant hotzah, even if you only have two seeds. You know, before we spoke about five seeds, but these are more significant vegetables. For example, kishuim are cucumbers and then we have diluim, which are gourds. We have pula mitzri, which are kind of Egyptian beans. And in all these cases, two seeds is enough. Now, the next part of the Mishnah is pretty strange to me. I don't know the sociology. You know, when I hear the word locust or different types of crawling creatures, I can't imagine that anybody would want to carry them from here to there. But apparently, at the time of the Gemara, that was different. Chagav chai tohar. We have a live grasshopper or a locust, and it's kosher. Kolshu. Now, what are we going to do with a locust, kosher? Well, maybe it's kosher and you want to eat it. Okay, fine, but mess, if it's dead, and even though it's a kosher locust, but now it's dead, it's grogeres. Okay, you can't eat it. So it's the size of a dried fig. And now it fits into the category of food. So what's so significant about a live locust that you chayv for kolshu? So again, you may be shocked, but apparently, back in the Gemara's time, you know, for children they had different pets. Today, you know, God knows what kind of pets they have. They give them tarantulas to play with. I don't know, they give them all sorts of things. And apparently these chagavim were, no matter what small size they were playthings for children. Again, I can't do any better than that. Tzipores krumim. Okay, there's another type of a locust that attacks the orchards. Usually krumim are vineyards, but here it means orchards. Bein chaya, bein mesa, kol shuhu. And the question is, what are you going to do with this locust that's a kol shuhu, and it's not even necessarily alive. It might be dead. And what are you going to do with a kol shuhu? I mean, if it's edible, if it's kosher, then again, we would need a shear of grogeres. But here he's saying whatever the size is. So the Mishnah answers, Shematznino son lirafua. Apparently, these kinds of locusts that attack the orchards actually have a medicinal therapeutic value. And therefore, no matter what the small size is, it could be therapy, as we spoke before about migraine headaches. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Af ha-motzi chagav chai tameh. Now, if you're talking about giving the child a plaything, a pet, then it matters not whether it's kosher or not kosher. Right? So let's say the old-time Yemenites. I have a lot of jokes about that, but not for now. They still eat certain kinds of locusts. I don't know, probably not too many around, but there are a few. It's kosher. And now it's tummy, so you can't eat it. So Rabbi Yehuda says, well, matznino solukot lischok bo. It's a plaything for a child, and what difference does it make whether it's kosher or not? The Chachamim insists that it's got to be kosher. We're not going to give a non-kosher chagav to a child to play with. I mean, he might be tempted to eat it. Again, I don't know. In those days, maybe they ate chagavim. So he might know the difference. He doesn't know the difference between a kosher chagav and a non-kosher chagav, so he might eat. So we're not going to give him as a plaything a non-kosher chagav. Rabbi Yehuda says, you know what? Let him play with it. And therefore it has significance, and even if it's a kolshu, and it's not kosher, nevertheless, he's chayfotza. Now let's get back to the garden seeds that we spoke about. And the shear was close to a dried fig, a little bit less. Uramini, we have another Mishnah that seems to contradict this. This is back on Daf Pei. And the Mishnah talks about different kinds of fertilizers. Zevel, Chol, Hadak, very fine sand, and other types of fertilizers. So how much are you chayv for the minimum amount for carrying a fertilizer? Kedela Zabel, all you have to need is enough to fertilize Kelach Shel Kruv. Just one stalk of cabbage that's growing in the ground. Divrei Rabbi Akiva Chacham Omer, no. Kedei Lezabel Kresha. Even if he takes out a smaller amount of fertilizer, for example, enough to fertilize a leek, okay, that's even smaller than a cabbage. But in any event, the Mishnah says that, our Mishnah, that all you need is a single seed, right? Well, what's a seed? Here it says you need enough to fertilize a growing vegetable, whether it's a cabbage or a leek. Now, in the case of a garden seed, just one second, our Mishnah says that if you have a plant that grows from one single seed, then that's a chashuva seed, and that's a chashuva plant. Here we're talking about larger plants, vegetables. Omer HaPapa, Rapapa says, let's differentiate between the Mishnah and this Braisa. All right, or one Mishnah and another Mishnah, I should say. Had Zriya, Had Lo Zriya. Now, if you're talking about seeds that haven't been planted yet, then what's it worth it to you to take out a small amount? You don't bother with a small seed. If you already have something that's planted, that has significance. So if you're going to carry out fertilizer for the sake of a single growing plant, then we're going to say that that's enough fertilizer for one growing plant. It's worth it for you to take out this fertilizer, even a small amount, because you already have a plant that's growing and you want to fertilize it. But our Mishnah is talking about lozria. Our Mishnah is talking about garden seeds alone. They haven't been planted yet. And you're not going to bother planting, you know, let's go out to the garden now and plant one seed. You know, that doesn't make any sense. It's not worth your effort. So therefore, we need a minimum size that's almost like a grogeres, which is a lot less than the size of zevel v'chol adak if you're fertilizing a vegetable that's already growing in the ground. So for a vegetable that's growing in the ground, it's worth it for you to carry out even a minimum amount of fertilizer to embellish and enhance the productivity of that one single vegetable that's growing. But if you're talking about seeds themselves, we need a significant amount of seeds, a volume, because otherwise it's not worth your effort to go out there and plant the seeds. Zerek Yishuim, we had the cases of various cucumbers and gourds and so forth, and the shear was two seeds. Tanur Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, motzi gar'inim. What about the pits of dates? So when you and I eat a date, right, what do we do with the pit? We throw it in the rubbish. That's because we're very wealthy. We don't have to worry. The pits are not worth enough for us to start collecting them. But back in the time of the Gemara, people were not so wealthy, and they collected these pits. What did they do with them? So it depends. Sometimes they would plant them to get a date tree, and if so, two pits, like we saw before, two seeds, are the shear fotzah. But if, on the other hand, lachila, they use for feeding animals, and the one animal that seems to be very fond of date pits is the chazir, the pig, kimlo pi ha-chazir, enough to fill up the mouth of a chazir. And apparently date pits are fit for selling to those who eat pigs, and therefore they're significant. I would sell them to a non-Jew. And all we need is enough to fill up the mouth of a pig. The Kama Malok Hazir Achas. So before we said that if we're talking about planting, we need two seeds. So if these two pits are serving as seeds for planting, then I need two of them minimum. But if I want to feed my friend's Hazir, then all I need is one single pit, and that'll fill up the mouth of a Hazir. The Brisa continues that there's a third function for pits, and that is lahasik. It can be used as fuel. And then it's kedei levashel beitza kala. All you need is enough fuel to get a fire that you can cook an egg. And as we said before, this is the hen's egg. It's a very small egg. And it's ready to just be cooked on the fire. Im lecheshbon. I don't know if you remember those days when we used to play games on Shabbos, like board games. And the question is how to remember the score. So we used to use a book in my day, you know, turn it to that page, and that would be a number. But in the old days, what they did was they took pits, and they used those pits to count up and tally numbers. Okay? So if it's l'cheshbon, to tally the numbers is shtayim. The minimum amount of tally would be two pits. Acherim omrim chamesh. Others say it's a minimum of five. Okay, because you don't need memory aids for two. You know, the numbers get complicated once they reach five. And that's the, you might lose track of the numbers if they are five and above. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned to the Brisa, Motzi Shnei Nimin. If a person carries out two hairs, Mizanav HaSus, that are taken from the tail of a horse, or Mizanav HaPora, or from the tail of a cow, two single hairs. Chayav. Why? What's significant about two hairs from a tail of either a horse or a cow? Horse, cow, cow, horse. Shematznian osan linishbin. People actually store these hairs. And we're talking about bird trappers that used to make nets. And these hairs that came from the tails of cows or horses were very effective in using them to make traps. And these traps were used to trap birds. Okay, fine. Now, the Brisa continues, Miksha shel chazir. Apparently the pig, it doesn't have maybe hairs as much, but it has certain kinds of thick growths, which is called miksha, miksha miloshin kasha, it's something hard. He translates here as bristles. And this is very significant, even achas. One bristle taken off the spine of a pig. Now, what are you going to do with one single bristle from a pig? And the answer is, you could sell it for tsure dekel. Okay? I'm sorry, I read too much at once. Let me stop and before we get to tsure dekel, talk about the bristles of a pig. Rashi says that the bristles of a pig could be used as needles, as like sewing needles, for stitching purposes. That's how hard they were. And these were used by cobblers. They would attach it to a cord and start stitching. Probably not stitching very sophisticated garments, but maybe stitching larger cloths and so forth and so on. Now we're up to leaves. Tsure dek of the leaves of a palm tree. Shtayim. Two leaves of a palm tree. What are you going to do with two leaves of a palm tree? You're going to use it for weaving baskets. There's a whole sugi about mukta earlier in Masechta Shabbos about these woven baskets. And they were woven from palm trees. And certain kinds of foods that weren't ripe and they were harvested, they used to put it in these baskets that were woven from palm trees, and that would speed up the process of maturation. And these weaving baskets would require palm trees, and they were used to create various kinds of utensils that were used in the context of weaving. So it's a significant amount if you take out two of these tsure dekel. And then you have tore dekel. These are also leaves, or maybe we call them vines, And achas, all you need is one of these vines that are taken from a palm tree. And these are thin strips of woody material taken from vines that grow from the roots at the base of a palm tree. And they would wrap themselves around the tree. So they started growing from the base of the tree. They wrapped themselves around the palm tree. And they are thinner than the leaves that we spoke about from the date tree. And Rashi says he doesn't know what they did with these vines, but the Miri says they were used as switches in working with beasts. So I don't know exactly what they did with beasts, but when they worked with beasts, they would maybe hit them and discipline them with these vines. The Mishnah says, Tzipores krumim. Okay, we said these are kinds of locusts that attach themselves to the orchards. Is bein chaya bein mesa kolshu, whether alive or dead, the minimum amount is a kolshu, just the smallest amount possible. Mai tziporis krumim, omar rav, palya biare. So that is the scientific name in Aramaic for these kinds of locusts. And the Gemara describes a little bit about the therapeutic value of these locusts. Omar Abaye, umishtakach bedikla dechad nevara. If you want to find them, then you find them in a young palm tree that is wound about with a single vine. In other words, it's in its very early stages. It's young, really immature, such that it only has one single vine at this point in its development. And this is where these locusts like to, the habitat of these locusts. The avdi la l'chukma. Chukma means chachma. And the value of this kind of a locust, I'm assuming, I hope I'm not misleading you, but I think that this is a kosher locust. And it can somehow enhance your wisdom. Achale lepalga diamene. Right? The very specific ways that you eat this locust in order to get the impact. First, lepalga, you have to split it in half, and then you have to eat the right half. Upalga the smali ramale begufsa de nechasha. What are you going to do with the left half? You throw it into a tube, which is made of copper. The nechasha is copper. Vechasim le, and you have to seal it. Beshitim gushpanki, 60 different types of seals. You have a seal made of pitch. You have a seal made of wax, a seal one of earth, of clay, and you got to get 60 different types of seals to close up, you know, lock up this half a locust in the copper tube. This simonech, and if you want to remember this, then use a pasuk in Koheles that says, Lev chacham limino, v'lev ksil lismolo, that the heart of a wise man will bring him towards the right side, and of a fool, towards the left side. Okay, so here, what we're talking about is the left side that's going to be locked up for a certain period of time in this copper tube that's sealed 60 times over. Bechachim kama deboy. Alright, so now he puts the tube on his arm. He hangs it around his arm. And he can acquire as much knowledge, chakim, as he wishes. I tried it. I don't know. It didn't work for me. I guess I got confused with the 60 seals. I don't know. The gomar kama deboy. And he can learn as much as he wishes. And it seems like the right side, which he ate, that's going to allow him to maintain or retain everything that he learns, without forgetting it. This is a magical potion to increase mental capacity. I mean, we should give it to the older people
and delay dementia. Amnesia.
Yeah, that's, I think, it's more, it's a little bit less than dementia. I don't know. The ochale leodich palga. Now it's important that he eat the second half after he attains all this knowledge. He has to eat the second half. So he's going to have to break open, I think, these 60 seals in order to eat the second half of this presumably kosher locust. There's a lot at stake over here, because if he doesn't eat the second half, he's going to forget that which he learned. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af hamotzi, even if he takes out a non-kosher locust, he's chayev. Why? Because he can give it to his child to play with. The Tanakama savar lo. And why is a non-kosher locust, why isn't he chayev? After all, it's significant enough to give to a child to play. And the Gemara answered, by time of Dilma Ochle, he's afraid that the child might actually eat it, so he's not going to give him a plaything of something that's not kosher. Ihochi tohar nami. Maybe we should be afraid that a child will eat a kosher locust. And Rav Kahana, avi koyim kami de Rav, when Rav Kahana was in front of Rav, vavi koma aber shushiva afume. And he had a type of a kosher locust upon his mouth. Omalei Rav said to him, Shakli, take it out. Dilo lemra mechal kochale. It looks like you're eating it. V'kavar mishum bal teshaktu es nafsho sechem. So we don't eat something, even though it's kosher, we don't allow you to eat it while it's live for a different reason. And that's because the isur bal teshaktu. So it's disgusting and abominable to eat something that's alive, a live insect, even if they're kosher. So therefore the Tanakhama says we can't even give a kosher locust to a child to play with because he might eat it alive. The Tanakhama allows you to take out you're chayiv if you take out a live kosher locust on Shabbos, whatever the size may be, because it's stored for what? For a child to play with? I mean, what's going on? Apparently the Tanakhama is not afraid that if you give the child a locust, he's going to play with it. I mean, I'm sorry, he's going to swallow it. Because otherwise he should be afraid of this violation of lo teshaktu. So then why does the Tanakhama say that if it's a non-kosher locust, then you're not chayev for a kolshu? Obviously he's not afraid that the child is going to swallow it. Ella, but rather, Dilma mayis v'yochale. Tanakhama is afraid that the locust might die and the child will eat it after it dies. And here's the difference between a live kosher locust and a non-kosher locust. In both cases, he's afraid not that the child will eat the live locust, but he might eat it after it dies, and if it's kosher, that's not bad, but if it's unkosher, that's very bad. Rabbi Yehuda says, Imayis katan mispad safidle. Literally translated, if it dies, the child will eulogize it. In other words, he's not going to eat it. People have no problem in giving, you know, this kind of a locust to a child. If it's alive, the child's not going to eat it. If it's dead, then he's not going to eat it either. He's just going to bury it and give it a good eulogy. All right, then Hadron Alecha, Perek Omer Rabbi Akiva, and now we're up to the 10th Perek of Masechta Shabbos here on page 90b Hamatznia, and once again the Mishnah is going to talk about how much of a minimum amount of a certain substance would constitute a violation of Melechas Hotzah. Hamatznia Lezera, we'll just quickly read through the Mishnah. If he stored an amount of seed for the purpose of planting, Uledugma, or a small amount of a substance that he wants to use as a sample to show to prospective customers, lerfua, or for medicine, votzio b'shavas, he put it away because it was very important for him, and he hid it up in some sort of a treasury place and locked it up, ischai b'kolshu. Alright, even though in this case he did not carry a shear, but nevertheless, since he locked up even a kolshu, that indicated that he saw it as chashiv. V'chol adam eino chayev olav elikishurim. But if somebody did not lock it up, then we go back to the objective shiurim. So now we have in the Mishnah two different shiurim, minimum amounts for hotzah. One is objective, and the other is subjective. And the subjective one applies to someone who stored a small amount of the substance. And chazar v'chniso, okay, now the person carried out into Rishus HaRabim a small amount. Now he brings it back in to Rishus HaYochid. Eino chayev ela b'shiuro. In other words, his chashivus is only as far as Meleches Hotzah when he takes it out of a private domain. But when he brings it back in, then we require a shiur, an objective amount. Okay, so Mirz Hashem will analyze this Mishnah B'lineda tomorrow. Tomorrow we have a shiur at 10:30. And if anyone's interested, at 9:30 we'll learn B'lineder Meshech Chachma for Parshas Baloscha. And tonight at 9 o'clock, if anyone's around, a shiur on the Rav's insights into Parshas Baloscha. Take this opportunity to wish everyone a great day, and if I don't see you, a wonderful Shabbos.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.